All right. So that's the movie we're talking about today, Silence. And I asked a few of you guys if you guys watched it, and most of you said no. So I'm going to explain the movie to you guys. So this movie is supposed to take place in the 16th century. It was written written in the late 1900s by a guy named Shusaka Endo, who is a Catholic Christian Japanese person. And he wrote this book, and it was his way of expressing his faith. And this is a story about three Portuguese Jesuit priests. And so if you guys know the history of Christians in Japan, some of you guys do, the story goes like this. Years ago, there was a missionary from Europe that came into Japan. His name is Francisco Xavier. He spread Christianity, and there's about, I would say about 30,000, oh no, maybe 300,000, I can't remember how many zeros there were. But there was a lot of Christians. It just kind of blew up all of a sudden. And then about 30 years after that, all of a sudden Japan decides to close its doors and says, no more Christians. And they start persecuting Christians. They said, if you're a Christian, you can't be here or we're going to kill you. We're going to persecute you. We're going to put you in prison. And so this massive persecution started breaking out. And when that happened, the way that they could identify who's a Christian or not is by using this thing called a fumie, which in Japanese literally translates to fumi means to step on, e means picture, to step on a picture that represents Christ. So this is a story about Jesuit priests, and this is actually historical. It's not just a movie or a book. It actually happened. So I want to show you some pictures. This is from the library of the Jesuit priests. These are actual pictures that people were forced to step on. Some were maybe made out of paper, some of them were made out of like copper, but basically they put it on the ground and they step on it. Some cases they would ask them to spit on it or blaspheme God or whatever it is, and when the people couldn't do it, that's when they knew that you were a Christian, and they would send you off or they would do something to you, they would kill you, whatever the case is. Now, this act of persecuting Christian Japan didn't actually make the faith get smaller in Japan. It actually made it grow. The expert on this topic in America is actually a Jesuit professor. He's at University of San Francisco. This is his quote. This is what he said. He said, they realized that the Christians were emboldened by the example of the missionaries dying for their faith. So when they found out these missionaries were being killed for their faith, the people in Japan were like, I want to follow that guy. So they decided they must find a better strategy. What would really break the Christians' communities, they thought. So they were like, how can we actually make the faith in Japan get smaller? How can we get rid of Christians? Because it seems like when we try to persecute Christians, there'd be more of them popping up. But for each one, there's like three more that pop up. So how can we fix this problem, quote unquote problem? And so what they decided to do was they had this cool strategy. It was cool to them, not cool to me. But what they decided to do was what we're going to do is we're not going to persecute Christians until they apostatize. Apostatize is a fancy way of saying like turning your back on God. What we're going to do instead is we're going to persecute the Jesuit priests we're going to persecute the followers of these Jesuit priests until the Jesuit priest actually renounces his faith. Okay, so the story starts off with Father Ferreira. This is Father Ferreira, played by Qui-Gon Jinn, right there. And he's a historical character, actually. The story is fictional, but the character is real. His name is actually Cristóvão, I think. That's how I say it, Ferreira. And he was the mentor Jesuit priest of the time. What that means is, to us, that would be like Billy Graham. Okay, and this man, he's known to be the first person in Japanese history, the first Jesuit priest to renounce his faith publicly. That's what he's known for. He has nicknamed in our history books as the fallen priest. That's because he was the first to say, okay, forget Jesus, forget God. I want to renounce this faith. I want to renounce my faith. And when the people back in Portugal found out that their mentor, okay, like imagine if you're a Catholic and you said, Mother Teresa just renounced her faith. That's the effect that it had. They're like, is it true? Is it just a rumor? We should do something about it. Or in the Protestant evangelical circle, it'll be like, we just found out that Billy Graham just renounced his faith. And all these people who looked up to him are like, we got to do something about this. Let's go find out. So the main character of this story, which is this guy, Rodriguez, he's also a priest, he's Father Rodriguez. He and Adam Driver, who's Kylo Ren, they decide to sail over to Japan and do two things. Number one, find out if this rumor is true. Did he really renounce his faith? And number two, if it's true, this is what we have to do. We need to somehow fix the problem. Now, the way that these Japanese people were being persecuted on behalf of these Jesuit priests, there were many ways they did it. It was very torturous. Sometimes they would put them on a cross, and they would, they torture them the same way that Jesus was tortured. But the most cruel version of torture looked like this. This is actually a page from an actual Jesuit priest's diary of their experience in Japan, saying that, "I watched somebody die like this. They hang him upside down, and then they put their head below the ground, and they close the lid so that they see only darkness. And when they're upside down, the blood rushes to their head. And so what they do is they put a little slit in the back of their neck so that they won't pass out. And they could feel the blood dripping one drop by one drop until the Japanese people decide that they'll let him go." I mean, this is the kind of torture that these people were going through on behalf of the Jesuit priests. So when these people come to Father Ferreira, and eventually he renounces faith, but now we have Father Rodriguez in this story. When they come to him and say, "We're scared that they're going to torture us. What should we do? What should we do?" This is the answer that Rodriguez gives to the Japanese Christians. Let's take a look at this clip.
"But Padre, if we are forced to trample on the Lord, on the Fumi,
you must pray for courage, Mokichi."
"But if we do not do what they want, there can be danger for everyone in the village. They can be put in prison, taken away forever. What should we do?"
"Trample. Trample. That's all right to trample."
"What are you saying? You can't. Mokichi, you can't."
So he gives them a really interesting answer. He says, "It's okay to step on the image of Jesus. It's okay to renounce your faith because the torture is so gruesome. I would rather have you renounce your faith." And so Rodriguez gives this interesting answer, an answer that you don't think he would give because he's a priest. But his other friend, his other priest friend, says, "No, what are you talking about?" Now, what's really interesting about this, okay, is that we have two answers for one question. Should we trample on the image of the Lord for the sake of saving our lives? Well, what's the answer? Now, the reason why they both give a different answer is because there's a big tension here in this story. And I want to share that tension with you so you understand what's going on in the hearts of the main character. So in the Christian faith, the most important thing about our faith is this. This is found in Mark chapter 12. Jesus asked this question, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" Jesus, I want to get this thing called Christianity right. What is the one thing I have to get right? Tell me, if you could just narrow everything down to this one teaching, what would that teaching be? And this is Jesus' answer. "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength." He said, here's the most important thing about Christianity. Is love God with everything that you are. And so at that point, the person who asked the question is like, "Got it. I'll get working on that right now." And Jesus is like, wait, I'm not done yet. I'm not done with my little sermon here yet. Because he continues in the next verse. He says this, "The second is this." Now, the word "second" here is a really interesting word, and the implication here is interesting because it doesn't mean here's number one and here's number two. He doesn't mean second in that sense. He doesn't mean here's number one, make sure you get that right, and if you can, get this one right too. When he says second, he's not talking about order of importance. He's saying there's a second part to this that's equally as important as the first. Okay, so it doesn't mean it's lesser in importance. He says, here's the second one. Love your neighbor as yourself. So he said, if I could summarize the entire faith of Christianity into one commandment, it would be this. Love God and love others. And then after that, Jesus says this. There is no commandment greater than these. It's like, this is the most important thing you need to know about Christianity. Love God and love others. And there's nothing else that's more important than that. So here's the problem that these missionaries in Japan are having, which is this. What do you do when the greatest commandment is in conflict with itself? You see, in this story, the conflict that these priests are facing is this. I love God. I want to do everything I can to love him and, you know, be faithful to him. But in doing so, my neighbor is being persecuted. So I want to love on my neighbor, but by loving on my neighbor, I have to turn on God because the only way that I could save these lives is by making sure that I renounce my faith. So they're at this crossroad. They're like, which way do I go? I can't have both. In most cases, we could have both. But in this specific situation, the Japanese people, what they did was they created a system where they were forced to choose. Do I choose to follow God and show my allegiance to him while neglecting my neighbor? Or do I love my neighbor while neglecting God? I can't have both. Which way am I supposed to do? And so Rodriguez is at this point. He says, I don't know, but I've been witnessing a lot of people being persecuted, being tortured for me, right? And so what am I supposed to do? And so after he's seen so many people get persecuted, he's like, just trample, because I can't stand watching you get hurt like this. Whereas the other priest says, are you kidding me? No, you should ask for courage from God. You should never turn your back on God. And if I were to take a survey of the people in this room, and if I were to say, which one do you think is more important? Of course, the right answer is, they're both important. You can't say which one's more important. But if I were to say, but really, if you had to compromise on one, which one would you compromise on? I would say maybe about 50% of you would say, you never turn your back on God, Katz. You have to focus on God. Let them die. You need to focus on God. But the other half of you would say, but Katz, my neighbor is dying. My family, my children are being slaughtered. I need to do something to protect them. I'm sorry, God, but I have to focus on my family right now. I got to focus on my village right now. And at this point, the priest, or in this case, me, the pastor, is thinking, what do I do? Because I put myself in this situation. You see, the reason why I want to talk about this movie, there's a personal reason for this. My mom, well, actually, my entire family, you know, that I grew up in, none of the people in my family are Christian. And my parents don't like to talk about religion at all, so they avoid that topic when they talk to me. They talk about my kids, they talk about everything, but they don't talk about my work. But the first time that my mom came to me and asked me a question about my faith was after she read this book, and then she saw the movie, and she said, Katz, I was wondering, what would you do in that situation? And I'm like, great, we're talking about Jesus, and you're asking me this question, right? He's like, would you turn your back on your Jesus for the sake of saving me? That's what she said. If it meant that you could save your mom and your dad, would you turn your back on God? And my answer to her is, I have no idea, which is probably the wrong answer, right? Because my allegiance to God is so important, right? But my love for my parents is also important. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? You know, the first answer that came to my mind is like, well, in the Catholic Church, you know, they have these images of God. In the Protestant Church, we don't have images of God. So there would be no picture step on in the first place, right? That was my first answer, but she wasn't happy with that answer. So I told her, I don't know, I have to think about it. And I did give her an answer later on. I'll share that with you later. But that's the conflict that this main character is going through. Which one do I show my allegiance to? How do I love on my neighbor and love on God at the same time? Because I can't do that here. And in this movie, what he does is that he goes on this journey, this personal journey, and he starts to discover why Furrah picked the path that he did and whether if he should follow the same path as he did also. Now, along this journey, he eventually finds Furrah, Father Furrah. And by then he has a Japanese name. And he has a Japanese wife and a Japanese family already. And he has a Japanese job. Basically, he's doing everything that he vowed not to when he became a priest in the first place. And so when he meets him for the first time in this journey, I want to show that confrontation with you. And Ferreira's understanding of the situation is mind-blowing. So I want you to take a look at this.
I have labored in this country for 15 years. I know it better than you. Our religion does not take root in this country.
Because the roots have been torn up.
No, because this country is a swamp. Nothing grows here. Plant a sapling here and the roots rot.
There was a time when Christianity here grew and flourished.
When?
When? In your time, Father. In your time, before you became like...
Like who? Like them? Rodriguez, please listen. The Japanese only believe in their distortion of our gospel. So they did not believe at all. They never believed.
How can you say that? From the time of St. Francis Xavier, through your own time, there were hundreds of thousands of converts here.
Converts?
Converts, yes.
Francis Xavier came here to teach the Japanese about the Son of God, but first he had to ask how to refer to God. Dainichi, he was told. Shall I show you? There, Dainichi. Behold, there is the Son of God, God's only begotten Son. In the scriptures, Jesus rose on the third day in Japan. The Son of God rises daily. The Japanese cannot think of an existence beyond the realm of nature. For them, nothing transcends the human.
No.
They can't conceive of our idea of the Christian God.
You're wrong. You're wrong. They worship God. God, our Lord. They praise the name of Deus.
That's just another word for a God they never knew.
I saw men die.
I did too.
For Deus, on fire with their faith.
Your martyrs may have been on fire, Father, but it was not with the Christian faith.
I saw them die. I saw them die. They did not die for nothing.
Indeed not. They're dying for you, Rodriguez.
Ah. Okay. So what's going on here is really interesting. He says that the belief that they had about Jesus wasn't really a belief about Jesus in the first place. So for Rodriguez, it was a lot easier. I mean, for Ferrero, it was a lot easier to turn his back on their God, their version of Jesus, because he believed that their version of Jesus was not the real Jesus. But what he's actually saying here is the main point of this whole movie. Okay, so get this. Okay, so when God enters into a culture, okay, a lot of times, I would say in most cases, it's hard for people to understand or grasp the concept of God. Okay, as a matter of fact, when you think about how God entered into the Jewish culture, right? When we think about God, Yahweh, we think of him as a Jewish God, but we understand God to be the God of all things, of all nations, all tribes, all tongues, right? But he chose to enter into a Jewish culture. So when God enters into a culture, this happens. The culture dresses God. So when God entered into the Jewish culture, he didn't just say, here I am, I'm God, get to know me. He said, just so that you have an easier way of understanding who I am going to use the Jewish culture's imageries. I'm going to use your practices. I'm going to use your mythologies. I'm going to use everything that you have at your disposal so you understand me from your native tongue, from your native culture, right? And so he says that when Francis Xavier brought God into Japan, in order for them to understand who God is, he had to utilize some of their imageries, their mythologies, their understanding, their practices to help them understand who God is. And in doing so, they got to understand who Jesus is, sort of, but not completely. And this is not just an ancient thing. We do this too. A few years ago, I remember people were wearing these trucker hats that says, Jesus is my homeboy. You guys remember that? Yeah, okay, you guys were around for that, right? And that's good because we understand, yes, Jesus is your friend. He's a friend next to you, right? Like, you want to know Jesus as your friend, okay? But if your understanding of Jesus as he is your homeboy is your limited understanding of God and that's all you stick to and you build an institution around that, your understanding of Jesus is very limited, but it was a good entry point, okay? A few years ago, a book came out called Jesus is My CEO, saying that he's my CEO, I do everything he tells me to do, he's the one that helps me get success, I do whatever I can to help build his kingdom. Yes, that's great. If that's your way of understanding relating to God, you could understand Jesus as your CEO, but your CEO is not your best friend. Your CEO is not going to die for you. Your CEO is not going to sacrifice himself for the sake of the well-being of the world. But if your entry point into knowing Jesus is through the business world, and you're like, I understand what a CEO is, and if God is my CEO, and you start to understand, you start to build your understanding of God, God enters into a culture, and culture needs to dress that God in order for us to understand that God. But if you just stay there, remember, that's good, but if you just stay there, then it's bad. We need to continue to grow our understanding of God, start to strip away the things that helped us understand God in the first place. We have to start stripping those things away to see who God really is. Are you guys following what I'm saying here? Because this is really important. As a matter of fact, the director of this movie, Martin Scorsese, he was in an interview. He was being interviewed by a Jesuit priest. And this is what he said that the whole point of this story is. Take a look.
How would you describe the heart of the book?
Well, I think it's the depth of faith. It's where one... It's the struggle for the very essence of faith, stripping away everything else around it. You have to find that faith, or you have to find a relationship with Jesus, I think, with yourself, really, because ultimately that's the one you face.
Yeah, so what he's saying here is the method that we use to connect to God originally is not a bad thing, okay? But we have to understand that when we're introduced to Jesus in the first place, that that is actually a dressed version of Jesus. It's like this. If you want to learn how to ride a bicycle, you first put training wheels on so that you're introduced to the bicycle and you're not scared of the bicycle and you start to ride the bicycle and you're doing just fine. But eventually you have to strip away those training wheels so you understand that a bicycle actually only has two wheels. And this is what Scorsese was trying to do through this movie. He was saying, Rodriguez, the main character, he has this vast understanding of God, of Jesus, right? But that's not enough. When he's put in this situation, everything he knows about God is put into question, and he has to start to strip away the things that are excess to his faith. So I'll give you an example in this movie, okay? Every time Rodriguez closes his eyes and prays to God and tries to imagine what Jesus looks like, this image comes on the screen. It's an old painting of Jesus, and this is a very typical way that Jesuit priests depicted Jesus. First, he's very westernized. He doesn't look Jewish. He looks like he's from their area. He looks Portuguese, right? And he's always suffering. There's always a thorn or crowns on him, and he's bleeding, but he has no emotion on his face. And not only that, they also believe that suffering was the ultimate way of showing devotion to their God. That's their understanding of who Jesus is. The way that he showed devotion to his God is by making sure that he would suffer for him. So that's his understanding of who Jesus is, okay? Now, I want to show you another scene. This is the part where he's on the run. He's trying to get away, but and he's trying to survive in the wild. Take a look at this scene right here.
Was he angry when he said them?
I wasn't too scared.
Or did they come from love?
Are you all right, Padre? You seem so tired.
Oh, I'm all right. The fish you gave me is so salty.
I thirst. What?
I thirst.
Our Lord said that.
Yes.
I get some water.
Oh.
I get water.
Kichichiro.
So Father Rodriguez says, I thirst, which is a famous line that Jesus said when he was suffering. And now that he's suffering, he decides to use the same line that Jesus used. So he could say, I'm just like my Lord. I'm like my Jesus. There's lines in the movie where he says, I wonder how he felt when he was suffering like I was. As a matter of fact, next screen, you see this image right here. We just saw this right here. It's a zoomed out place of where he is. Scorsese says that he filmed this scene like this because he wanted to show people that in Rodriguez's mind, he thought he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, just like Jesus was when he was suffering. The point in which he connects with God is through his suffering. As a matter of fact, later on in this scene, he goes to a place with a lot of water, and he's trying to drink water from the, I think it's a river, and he looks into a reflection, and he sees this. He sees the image of Jesus in his reflection. Again, because he relates to Jesus through his suffering, right? And then in a scene later on, when he gets captured, and it turns out that Kichijiro, that the man he was with, was the one he betrayed him, and he gets a bounty for, he gets money for turning him in. He sees him as Judas because he sees himself as Jesus. And then after that, when he's taken into the city and he's being taken to the Lord that he's going to be persecuted, Nick, he looks around and he sees the crowd in the same way that Jesus probably saw the crowd when he was carrying his cross. So every step of the way, he sees himself as playing the role that Jesus did in the that he read in the Bible, you know, probably his whole life. But that's where this story focuses on and says, this is what's actually wrong with Father Rodriguez. So now he's in prison. Father Ferreira shows up, and he decides to give him a piece of his mind. Take a look at this scene right here.
Be quiet. Don't speak to me. You have no right to speak to me.
Oh, I do. Because you were just like me. You see Jesus in Gethsemane and believe your trial is the same as his. Those five in the pit are suffering too, just like Jesus, but they don't have your pride. They would never compare themselves to Jesus. Do you have the right to make them suffer? I heard the cries of suffering in this same cell, and I acted.
You excuse yourself! You excuse yourself! That is the spirit of darkness!
So when Rodriguez, when he reads the Bible, he looks at the story of Jesus and says, I'm just like him. But when the Japanese disciples, when they read the Bible, they don't look at the story and say, oh, my suffering is just like Jesus. They look at the Bible and say, my suffering is just like this, the suffering of the disciples. So Father Ferreira looks at Rodriguez and says, you know what's wrong with you? You think you're Jesus. You think that you're playing the role of Jesus in this story. And you're the only one here that thinks that. This is why, okay, when somebody comes to you and says, should I trample on the image? You say, yes, do it. But when you're asked to do it, you can't do it. It's like, why is it so easy for you to tell somebody else to deny God, but you can't do it yourself? And he says, the reason is because you think you're the main character of the story. You think that you're a special case. You think that your suffering is special and theirs isn't, right? So the truth is this, the Rodriguez was convinced that he was playing the part of Jesus. But the problem here is he wasn't just playing the role of Jesus, he was playing the role of his version of Jesus, the European suffering Jesuit version of Jesus. And he was actually okay allowing other people to suffer on his behalf. So, in this scene, Father Rodriguez had to ask the toughest question that he had to ask himself, which is this. What is the true reason? What is the real reason at the core? If I'm really honest with myself, why can't I apostatize? Why can't I do it? And really, there's only three possible answers for Father Ferrer. There's only three possible answers. Number one is that if I were to turn my back on God, okay, and maybe you should ask this question to yourself too. Why are you following Jesus, right? Number one, is it because that if I were to renounce my faith, God is in the heavens thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe you turning your back on me. I am so upset. Oh, I can't believe it. Like, are you afraid of hurting God's feelings? Is that that's option number one. Reason number two, possible reason number two, is if I turn my back on God, I will end up in hell. My eternity is going to be totally messed up. Option three is if I turn my back on God, the people at the church is going to judge me. My community is no longer going to respect me anymore. Oh, you're the fallen priest part two. Oh, I can no longer take you seriously, right? Here's the thing. In the three options we just talked about, that God might get upset, that I might end up in hell, or that that the church will judge me, the last two reasons is actually a very selfish reason. Think about it. There are people who are being hung up upside down, and they're slowly dripping their blood out, dying little by little. And you're saying, I would rather have five people die like that than me get judged by the church. I would rather have 100 people in that village be crucified by the beach as they drown than me making sure that I go to heaven. And so what he's doing here is he's confronting his true self. He's saying, why am I really having a hard time? Why is it so hard for me to say no to Jesus? Why is it so hard for me to turn my back on God? Because right now I'm struggling. Is it, you know, do I love God with all my heart and turn my back on my neighbor, or do I love my neighbor with all my heart and turn my back on God? What am I supposed to do? And the question that is asked here is, is that really the tension that you're experiencing right now? Is the tension really that loving God and loving your neighbor, is that really the tension here? Because what Father Ferrer reminds him is this, that by loving on God's loved creation, you're actually loving God also. That God loves and God died for these people over here, and so it shouldn't be two separate things. It should be one and the same, that by loving on these people, doing whatever it takes for you to love on these people, you're actually loving God also. But for some reason, you can't do that. Why? Well, that's the real thing. Why can't you turn your back on God for the sake of loving on God's people that you really loved? And as it turns out, it's revealed that the reason why is because he had pride. The reason is because he had a hard time turning on God, because if he did, the church would judge him. That his fellow padres will look at him and say, you're not one of us anymore. You could never show your face at this church anymore. And so I want to show you that scene right here. This, now he's placed in front of the fumie. And Father Ferrer is trying to convince him, you got to do the right thing. And I want you to pay attention to the words that he uses here. Take a look at the screen.
No, he's here. Christ is here. I just can't hear him.
Show God you love him. Save the lives of the people he loves. There is something more important than the judgment of the church. You are now going to fulfill the most painful act of love that has ever been performed.
It's only a formality. Just a formality.
He says, there's something more important than the judgment of the church. And when he said that, it hit the nail right on the head. He said, the reason why you're having a hard time apostatizing for the sake of saving hundreds of people's lives is because you're afraid of how the church is going to judge you. But there's a more important line that came right after that, and I put it on the screen for you guys. You are now going to fulfill the most painful act of love that has ever been performed. You are now going to fulfill the most painful act of love that has ever been performed. In the Jesuit circle, they believed that the greatest act of love was suffering. But what part of Jesus' suffering was the most important act of love? Well, to them, when Jesus was flogged, and there were chunks of flesh flying out of his back because of the way they flogged people back then, that was very, very painful. But that's not the most, they don't believe that that's the most painful thing that Jesus went through. Or when Jesus put the thorn of crowns on his head, when they put the thorn of crowns on Jesus' head and went into his scalp and their, you know, blood coming all over his face, that was painful, but they don't believe that was the most painful part of the crucifixion story. Or when they took rods and they beat him down, that hurts. I'm sure that hurts a lot, okay? But that wasn't, in their eyes, that wasn't the most painful act of love that Jesus performed. Or when his back was all bleeding and there's ribbons of tissue just hanging from his back, and they put a robe on him, and as the blood starts to coagulate, they rip that thing off, opening up his wounds again. That was painful. Or when they put nails in his hands and his feet, right? That was really painful, but the Jesuit priests didn't think that was the most painful thing that Jesus went through, because they knew that Jesus knew that after all this was over, that he would be getting a new body. So to them, yes, that was painful, but they didn't believe that was the most painful part of the crucifixion story. To them, the most painful part of the Jesus' suffering story is actually found in Mark 15. This is what they believe is the most painful part of Jesus' life. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice. He says, Eloi, Elohi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? They believe that the most painful part that Jesus had to play in his life was from the first time he became sin, and now God and his son had to turn their backs on each other, that there was a separation that happened. You see, we only understand history as it's recorded for us, but God existed way before history, way before our time, way before the world was formed. And if, as far as we can look back, the Father and the Son were always together, and the Holy Spirit, they're always together. And for the first time in all of God's existence, for the very first time and the only time in God's existence, there was this time when God and the Father were ripped and torn apart from each other. And to Jesus, that was the most painful part. And that's what the Jesuit priests believed. They believed that the most painful thing that Jesus had to experience was this moment when God the Father and God the Son were separated and their backs were torn to each other. For the first time ever, Jesus saw that backside of his Father. And he believed that that was the most painful thing. Jesus was separated from God to free all humanity. The ultimate price that Jesus had to pay to make sure that we had freedom was that separation from God. And so when Father Ferreira says, you have to now perform, you have to now fulfill the most painful act of love, he's referring to Jesus and saying, remember when Jesus gave everything up, including turning his back on the Father for the sake of freeing everybody. He said, you want to relate yourself to Jesus? You want to think that you're Jesus in this story? Then you need to do what Jesus did. You need to turn your back on Jesus for the sake of setting these people free. And at that point, Father Rodriguez had a profound realization that he realized at this point that the Jesus that he was hanging on to all along was the Jesus of his institution, of the Jesuit denomination. Because in that denomination, he had stature. He had respect. People looked up to him. People came to him for confession. And that by turning his back on God, what he's really losing is not Jesus. because he understands that if you're Peter in this story, Peter who denied Jesus three times, God showed grace on somebody who turned his back on God. So what he was really afraid of losing was his position in the church. What he was really afraid of was not being separated from God by apostatizing. What he was really afraid of was the judgment that he was going to receive from the people around him. The people who put their lives on the line for him, now he realized they're not going to see me the same way anymore. Now, this movie is called Silence because he prays and prays and prays for God to show up and fix the whole thing, and God doesn't respond. He prays and prays, and he says, "Why are you so silent to me? Why can't I hear your voice? What's wrong?" And the part of the reason is because he's been praying to the wrong God this whole time. He was praying, just like say, how the Japanese people dressed God and so they could understand him and create an institution around that. It turns out that he himself, in the Jesuit circle, he connected with God, but they created a whole institution around Jesus' suffering. And he realized that every time he was praying, he was expecting a certain type of answer, when all along God was giving him an answer. And the answer was, apostatize. Step on the fumiya, step on it now, and set these people free. That was the answer that God was giving him throughout the whole movie. And now for the first time, when he comes to terms with that, he finally hears the voice of God. This is the final scene I'm going to show you guys. This is the part where all the background noise just fades to quiet. And all of a sudden, he hears the voice of God for the first time. Listen to what he hears from God.
Come ahead now. It's all right. Step on me. I understand your pain. I was born into this world to share men's pain. I carried this cross for your pain. Your life is with me now. Step.
So the quote that God gives him, now, this isn't really God speaking, this is the script, okay? But I think they bring up a really important point. Let's put the quote up there. Come ahead now, it's all right, step on me. I understand your pain. I was born into this world to share men's pain. I carry this cross for your pain. Your life is with me now. Step. What he's realizing here, like what God tells him is this. The reason I came into this world is to be trampled on so that people can be set free. What you've been doing all along is you've been keeping me from doing that. What it's forcing Rodriguez to do is something really interesting. He's basically saying, God is basically telling Rodriguez, your job is to love on the people that I love. That's the role I have for you. Okay, you could turn your back on me because that's what I came into this world for. People have turned their backs on me all throughout history. You have to believe me, okay, that by doing that, you doing this, by turning your back on me, you have to believe that my grace is enough for you. You have to believe that I'm a God that forgives even things about like that. You have to believe that I'm a God that looks at somebody turning their back on me, and you have to believe that I'm not the kind of God that says, oh, I can't believe you turned your back on me. I can never talk to you anymore, right? You have to believe that I'm the God that continues to pursue you. You have to believe that I'm the God that forgives people who do that. You have to believe that I'm the God that will show mercy towards people who do that. It's like, don't you know I understand the situation you're in? Are you worried about how that when you die, you stand before God and how you're going to answer to you apostatizing? Are you worried about that? Well, in that case, then, I guess, Rodriguez, you're going to have to trust me. You're going to have to believe that my grace is enough for you. That's what God is saying in this scene. In other words, Rodriguez was forced to rely on the grace of God. You see, when you follow a Jesus that's all about suffering, it's basically a Jesus of allegiance. I'm willing to go through hell just to make sure that my, you know, like, I will do whatever it takes to make sure that I'm focused on you. And that was his limited understanding of who Jesus was. He didn't understand the gracious side of Jesus. And in this story, he was confronted, do I follow the Jesus of allegiance? And no matter what, I'm not going to turn my back on you? Or am I going to start to discover this other side of Jesus, the Jesus that's willing to do anything to save the lives of the people around him? Now, this is a sermon. It's not just a movie review, so I'm just going to give you a quick application, okay? Because I think there's something really interesting in this story, and this is kind of the same answer I gave my mom when she asked me, what do you think? What would you do in this situation? For someone like Rodriguez, you have to have your life perfect. You have to live a certain specific way in order to please God. Because you don't really focus on the grace of God. You just focus on making sure that you have everything that God has asked you for, that every commandment that God asks you to perform, that you're doing it exactly as he says. Right? Because in a way, they're performance-based. As long as you do the right things, then you feel that God is smiling upon you. If you feel like you have to be on your best behavior for God to smile upon you, then you're in the same boat that Rodriguez is in. That you focus so much more on the commands of God and less on the grace of God. The question is, do you really trust in the grace of God? Do you seek approval from God? If every morning you're waking up thinking, I got to do this and this and this so that God will smile upon me, so that God would approve of me, then you have the same version of God that Rodriguez had. If you're the kind of person that says, like, I worry how much I've let him down today because I sinned 4 times today. Oh, well, that was 5 times. I lied. Okay, that's 6 times. Okay, oh, like, and you're making this list of all the wrongs you did. If your prayer at night sounds more like a confession than it does just a conversation with God, you fit in the same boat. You're in the same boat as Rodriguez is in. Because in your mind, you believe that in order to please God, you have to do everything right. And Rodriguez, for the first time, he discovered that God is actually gracious. And that he was put in a situation where he had to trust that God was gracious. That one day when he faces God after he dies, that God's not going to look at him and say, I can't believe what you did out there. You know, I don't care how many people died and suffered for you. You should have stayed true to me. Like, he has to believe that when he gets to heaven, that's not the God he's going to experience. That he's going to meet a God that says, I saw what you went through. I was speaking to you every step of the way. You didn't hear me, but I was trying to walk you through it. I suffered with you. And I'm sorry what you went through. But that was a tough place that you were put in. That he has to believe that the God that he's going to be seeing after he dies is a God of empathy and sympathy. Not a God of black and white. So are you that person? Are you that person that feels like I have to get every single commandment right in order for God to love me? I have to do the exact thing that I was told to do or God's going to be disappointed in me. Is that you? Because if that's you, that's not who our God is. Yes, that is an aspect of God. But if you build a whole institution, if you build your whole life on that one belief of God, then you will miss everything else about him. It's time that you get to know the gracious God, the God that loves you, the God that forgives, the God that has mercy for you, for his mercy is new every morning. Now, I don't want you to watch this movie and say, I get it, class. From now on, I'm going to just turn my back on God. That's not the point of this story, okay? Right? And you're like, well, you know, there's this girl that I really like, and I have to turn my back on Jesus to, you know, like, no, that's not what this point is, okay? That's not the point about this. That's not the point at all. The point here is, are you relying on the commands of God to get to know God, or are you in relationship with him where you know him? Are you loving the people that he loves? Is your heart breaking over the things that breaks his heart? That's the question that I believe that the author of this story, Shusaku Endo, is really trying to convey. Because the choice that Ferreira and Rodriguez makes is a very unpopular choice. People mock them. Ferreira went down in history as a fallen priest, and nobody took him serious until the day he died. And if I were to tell you, oh, so-and-so renounced their faith, you would probably judge them right away. It's probably because we all buy into this version of God that says you have to be a certain way in order for you to follow him. What's interesting is they give you a few glimpses of the lives that Ferreira and Rodriguez lived after the renouncement. And you could tell right away, even though on the outer appearance they're living like they're not Christian anymore, every once in a while it slips. They say something about God, like, hey, we're here loving on the people. And they're like, oops, we can't say that out loud. You could tell that even though they renounce God, in a way they're experiencing God more in a more real way now than they have ever have. So the point is this. How do you relate with God? Is your understanding of God just limited to just one thing? Is the vehicle in which you got to know God your only understanding of God? Or are you growing and understanding more different aspects of him? What I told my mom was this. I told her, my call is to love on the people that God loves. And I said that if something were to happen to you, I would do everything I can to make sure that you're loved by me. And I would do the same for my family, and I would do my best for anybody that I feel that God has called me to love. If it means that I have to renounce publicly, meaning that I could never be a pastor again, I will do that because God has called me to love my neighbor and love God. By loving the people he loves, I'm also loving God. Amen? Amen. This is a hard thing to swallow, I think. Let's pray.